welcome to another episode of the We Have a Meeting podcast. So today we're going to be speaking about how to create a winning mindset in sales and life. So from belief systems to becoming a high performer, we are lucky to be joined by a mindset and transformational coach for high performers and an NLP master coach. Our guest today is Adele Kamel Whitley. Adele, how are you?
Hi, Jack. I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Very well. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. I'm excited to talk about all things mindset today. We had a previous conversation and we realized our bookshelves look very similar. Yes. Not in the sense that they're both from IKEA, in sense of the books that come with them. So, Adele, tell us, who are you and what problem do you solve?
Yes, so I'm a Lebanese digital nomad right now. I used to live in Sweden when we met. So a mindset coach with over 20 years of sales and marketing experience. And what I've experienced and what I realized in those 20 years is that I worked with teams, I worked with entrepreneurs, I had my own businesses, I worked in sales all the time, and realized that there is something every time that keeps people from doing the actual sales. And I was very curious to know, what is it that stops people from asking for the order? What is it that stops people from go out and selling after they've done all this work before, you know, whether it's a great product or whether it's, you know, them doing the whole prospecting, setting, qualifying, but then asking the order has, you know, I was so amazed why so many people had a hard time doing that. So it became kind of my mission to understand that. And wherever I was, whether I was in a corporate setting or if I had my own business, I always tried to understand what is this resistance of the closing, of asking the order. And yeah, so what I do now, I help a lot of salespeople, closers, sales teams, individuals, entrepreneurs, business owners to overcome that shatter, or what do you say, that limited beliefs in your head, that self-talk that you had to with yourself every day, to overcome that and go for it. I mean, you're doing all this hard work and then you're failing on the last one, which is only a failure in your head. It's not really, you know, it's not reality. And as we're, yeah.
Well, I was going to say, so you're a mindset coach. So for anyone that's listening that isn't working in sales, they're going to take a lot away from it. But if you are working in sales, there's going to be a lot of talk today centered around how to get a winning mindset to be a high performer. I wanted to ask you, Adele, while we were on it, you were talking about something that stops people from asking for the order. So typically when you're sitting down with people that might not be high performers or they might be struggling, what is it that prevents them from being a high performer and doing those things?
So, of course, there's a lot of things. Like everything is very individualized. So, you know, in every individual conversation, new things comes up. But I did boil it down to three main things that I realized could be one core thing. And then you can go deeper in different layers and all these three things. And that was one, it could be a lack of belief in themselves. Like literally, they don't believe in themselves. But there's two more, and one is they don't believe in the product or the service that they sell. And the third one is that they don't believe in the company. It can be everything from values for the company, but also they don't believe that they're going to keep what they promise or the delivery. And when you have a lack of belief in one of these three, of course, it could be really hard to follow through, right? So, yeah.
You stumbled on it a little bit there. I've seen you talk about the concept of being sold on yourself, which I thought was intriguing. Could you elaborate on what that means and why it's such a crucial component?
100%. And just like you said, Jack, in the beginning, this talk is for salespeople, what I do primarily, but this can benefit everyone. Because what I did realize that people were not bought on themselves. They have not sold themselves to themselves. And what I mean is, I'm not talking about the transactional sales that we do on a daily, you know, the transactional sales. I'm talking about the sales that we have every day with ourselves, the sales that we have with our colleagues or with our kids or in our relationships, these everyday sales that we're constantly having, and most of the ones in our head, the stories we tell ourselves, the thoughts we have, the limited beliefs, everything, the sales is constantly going on in ourselves, that, you know, the conversation we have with ourselves. And what I've realized is that so many people are not sold on themselves. if you ask them, for example, is that your story? They don't know. Is that your belief? They don't know. They have not chosen those stories. They have not bought into their stories. Hence why it can create this gap of, you know, being authentic and living from a non-authentic place and feeling of unfulfillment, feeling of being stuck. So that's why I created my company, which is called Buy Yourself. And the whole concept is that you cannot sell anything to anyone before you buy yourself.
And typically, if people are listening to this right now, that might be something where they're dealing with the symptoms of not believing in themselves, but they don't know what the problem is. So what sort of questions could they be asking themselves to find out if they are struggling with a limited belief or the story doesn't match up?
Oh, yeah, it could be, okay, we all know this person that has what you call everything. You know, they have the house, they have the job, they have the money, they have the spouse, they have everything. But still, they're not happy. Like, they're asking, why am I not happy? I have what I'm supposed, you know, it's supposed to be everything. I have everything that society wants me to have. I have everything that my parents said I should have. And they still feel empty. But they still feel, you know, why am I not happy? And that could be a typical, you know, sign of there's something that you're doing that is not aligned with you, like your core you, and that you have not bought yourself.
So you touched upon it there, and I want to press on into that, Adele. You spoke a little bit about like societal expectations, so family influences, peer pressure, all of those different things that shape the narrative we tell ourselves. So in your experience, how do they present themselves, those families or friends or society?
It's all this shoulds. I should do that. I must do that. I have taught that if I do this, then that happens. It could be everything from if you're born into a family where everyone is doctors. Of course, your career is going to be a doctor. And you should not want anything else, because if you do, then there's something wrong with you. So there's all these beliefs that have come from family or society, whether you've born into that or you've came into that or you're in a company where you're growing into that culture. That is not your beliefs.
Okay. And how do we start? Where do we start? Like, let's go all the way back, and we're thinking about like from childhood. When is the best time to start questioning them, and how do we start to break them down?
Of course, I mean, it's hard because when you're a child, you just go with it. Although I remember when I was a child, I used to think there was something wrong with me. I used to think that because I didn't want to X, Y, Z, then there was something wrong with me and I still had to do it. But I remember, and I still remember that I thought that I don't want to do it. And, you know, and as I was growing up and my parents were very supportive, so they told me, you know, they were supportive from I could do anything I wanted. So as I was growing up, I realized that I didn't have to. But if you look at it from school, like, there's no one that encouraged you to be different. There's no one that says, well, if you don't want to play, then don't play. You know, so as a child, it's very hard. But growing up, I mean, you can always go back to when you have this feeling of unease, this feeling that it's not flowing, this feeling of resistance in your body. And I'm not talking about fear that we'll talk about later in sales. I'm talking about just feeling that I'm not connected with myself. And it's maybe hard to know that as a child, but as you grow up, you can start identifying this. You know, I'm not feeling good. I'm doing this, but it's against my will. This is making me tired. This is draining my energy. So stuff like that. I should be happy, but I'm not. So it starts with that part, like being aware and listening to yourself.
So I suppose that leads nicely on to, you know, stories are powerful things. We're hinting at that. If I said the word transformation to you and you were to think of all the people that you've worked with, who jumps out to you as this is a really good example of a transformation? Someone was here before and after they worked with me, they were there.
Okay, so first in my mind was a person. She had all the stories that if she asked questions, if she was told to do something and she asked questions, then she would be judged as incompetent, stupid, and she would lose her job. But what happened was, as she was not asking these questions, she couldn't fulfill her job. She couldn't, you know, it could be something needed to be done, but in order to fill this, in order to do this, she needed more information. But in her mind, this came from her childhood, like we talked about before. Her parents had taught her that she should just figure stuff out. If she'd asked something, they would tell her, well, you should have known that. You should have known that I would be mad if you don't come home from school in time. You should have known that I'm not in a good mood today. You know, you should have known this and that, which now have led to, in her job, if she wants to ask something as a follow-up question for something she's asked to do, she's afraid, because she's afraid that if she asks, she will be told off, she will be labeled as stupid, she will be labeled as incompetent. So they worked a lot with her, you know, with people pleasing and putting boundaries and trusting herself and that. And the result is now that she's flourished, she's being promoted, she is putting boundaries in all areas of her life. So this is not only in work. So, you know, the work we do may show up in one situation, but then once you learn that, you can have that in all areas in your life. And yeah, it's amazing. She is, looking back from the first time I met her and now, it's just, yeah, different person.
Wow. And is it typically in your experience, something's happened in childhood or the story started, the narrative started in childhood? Is that every single time that happens?
Absolutely. I cannot think of a time where we haven't come to the conclusion that it's been in childhood. And it can be simple things. It can be one sentence that someone told you years ago, but it stuck with you. It stuck with you. And that could affect you your whole life. But the good thing is, and why I love what I do, is that even if it has been part of your experience, even if it has been part of your beliefs, even if it has been part of your behaviors, it can stop today. And that's why I love NLP. That's why I love, you know, the coaching and the mindset, because we can change that.
I was role playing with some salespeople earlier, and one of the things that I like to throw in there is when I'm pretending to be a client, I say like, yeah, because we're looking to get in front of our clients, and the ideal client that we're looking to get in front of probably turns over anywhere between 100 million to 4 billion. And one of the most common response from salespeople, especially new salespeople, is, wow, that's a lot of money. God, that'd be amazing. That'd be amazing. Lots of money. And if something is a lot of money and you have mindset beliefs around money, then obviously you're never going to, if you feel like 5 million is a lot of money, you'll never be able to sell anything that's worth 5 million. So it's overcoming them. What typically happens in childhood for those kind of money beliefs to kind of plant and kind of make their way around the brain? And what are some of the things we can do to start overcoming those?
A very good one. And that's, it's actually funny because some things are maybe things that you've heard before, and some things I've tried to reframe when I work with salespeople around the money thing. But of course, in childhood, it could be that you come from a family that might not have a lot of money, or even if they do, it can be just, you know, they hold tight around money and money should be spent like this, or you should save money, or money is the root of all evil. So it's kind of a self-sabotaging thing because you have this in your mind. But what I do try to tell, to work with my coaches, is that do not take your values or your beliefs, even if it's not a value thing, but it can also be a value thing. Maybe you as a salesperson don't want to spend this amount of money on that. That could be a value thing too, even if it's not a limited belief. But do not take that and project it on your client. You know, if you would not spend $15,000 on the coaching, do not think that your client would not, and then project that on them. So it could both be, in my opinion, a limited belief, but also a value thing. But of course, if you're not ready to, like as a coach, if you don't have a coach, if you're not ready to invest in a coach, there will be some kind of misalignment there of how are you then going to be asking for those money and receiving those money and giving yourself permission to receive those money.
Absolutely. And the same with cold calling. It's like, if you are somebody that probably wouldn't respond well to a yes. cold call, you don't like a cold call, the chance of you delivering a good cold call is going to be hard. So, Adele, imagine I come to you and I'm riddled with money beliefs. I think £500 is a lot of money, and I've just got this new job where I'm selling software that's thousands. You've only got a couple of minutes with me to try and break those money beliefs. And I know that it might take longer, but where would you start? And what are the most important things that you'd do?
So I always question, is this true? Is this amount of money too much money? Like, really, is this main thing, and we spoke about that, you and me, Jack, is this true? According to whom? Right? So that gets many people to think. Because many people has not even stopped to think, is this true? So when you ask that question, you kind of get them off their feet. Like, they're like, what do you mean, is this true? Like, yes, I just said it. No, just because you said it, just because you heard it, does not make this true. So that is the first one, because I think once you've got them into that's not what I'm used to hearing, then you can start working from there, because then you started to go into the reframing part. Like, but if it's not true, what is it then? Yeah.
So we're in a, I don't know when this one will be out, but we're recording this in January, right? So a lot of people come into January with new goals, new hopes, new aspirations, and then by February starting to fall back into the old ways, and then maybe by March they're back to baseline. So why is it when people are starting on that transformational path that it just doesn't stick?
Many reasons. One of the reasons I found is that maybe you said you want to change too much at the same time. Maybe you're also transforming something that is not for you. So maybe again, you're going away. You're taking a transformation you want to do, but it's not what you want to do. It's just because you've heard someone wants to get in shape, or someone wants to get a new job in that sector, that thing, or someone wants to go on that travel. But it's not your transformation. It's not your dream. Because I believe that if it really is, and we take away the fact that you put in too much change, because too much change happening is also going to be hard. You need to think, what is the least, how can I make my changes last over a longer period of time? How can I stay consistently and not take too much changes at the same time? But if it's not your changes, if it's not your, what you want to change, and many times in January, it is, maybe health goals or habits that you're changing, or I don't know, but stop to ask yourself, is this what I want, or is this what I don't want? Is this my beliefs? Is this my stories? Is this my transformation? Or where did I get this from? So I truly believe that has to do with the alignment.
Let's say that I'm trying to think of an example from someone that maybe we do some sales coaching with, but sometimes people might come to us and say it's a confidence thing. Right, I think I've got an issue with confidence. Like you were saying before, are you asking for the close, or reluctance to pick up the phone or send that email that they've been putting off? So in terms of starting the process, I don't expect to give away all your secrets, but how do you typically take someone from I'm not confident enough to just starting to start the right steps?
So how do you get confident? I mean, you cannot get confident, because confidence comes from a proof that you can do something, right? But you cannot get there without doing it. So confidence comes from doing it and then seeing that it works, which makes your belief raise, and then doing it again and then believing that it works, then builds up your belief. So I work with that. So, you cannot get confident at something that you have never done. Of course you're not confident, but how do we get there? So, it's literally a one step, but, the first step is always the hardest, but once you've done it and you see, oh, it works, then you build up your belief in yourself, then you take more action, then you get more results, and you build up the belief again, and then you take more action, and then it comes there. And I try to keep people to stay in that momentum. And of course, you're not going to succeed all the time, but when we have started to get some results, building confidence can also go back and look at the results. So you can go back and look at past experience, past successes. But the first is always the hardest. But then when people realize that, well, if you don't start, you can never build confidence. So,
What do the first couple of results look like? Is it feeling? Is it something tangible? What does that present itself as?
So if you're talking about sales, for example, of course, everyone wants to, if it's set that meeting or close that call or get their quota. So in sales is mostly, the tangible results. But it can also be in general, like just not getting so anxious, just not getting afraid, just, you know, and that's also a reframing thing, because what is anxiety? Sometimes that could be, we talked about that too, me and you, Jack, in the, before. It could be a sign for something else. It could be hidden desire. So it could just be, like you said, either a step of getting another feeling or reframing the feeling, or it could be an actually tangible result.
Okay. And what, from your, obviously you're the expert, so why do you think people struggle, especially salespeople, with like the cold outreach, cold calling, things like that? Why do you think people struggle with the rejection so much?
So I read somewhere that 56 or 59% of salespeople have the fear of rejection, and it's directly connected to fear of not being liked. So many people come with a belief that if you do this, then you will not be liked, and if you don't, if you're not liked, then you're not okay. So they take it too personal. They take a rejection like something, you know, something bad, or, you know, something that, you know, they don't like you. But, you know, that is my main, like, the result that I've gotten, on what I've realized the most, that is the fear of something deeper. And the deeper thing is the fear of not being liked. But what I try to do there is try to reframe that. So what if we talk about the fear of not being liked instead of a desire to be respected? What if you being firm and not going, you know, not giving in to the customer's need just because you're afraid of not being liked, being firm and then earning the respect instead of being feared of not being liked?
And typically what would the difference be in output? So once I feel like that, how would I act?
You show up totally different, because what happens is when you have this fear of not being liked or fear of rejection, either you just, you know, freeze and, you know, the call just has to end, or you start saying to the, you know, giving in to the customer, you start giving them the power of the conversation. It could be everything from, okay, you know, I'll go down in price, or yes, you're right, or, you know, you start losing the whole power. And, you know, we know that in sales, you need to still guiding and leading the way. It's like a dance. So when you start seeing the fear of being liked and reframe it as, no, but I have a desire of respect, then you come and act from a different place. You don't go down in price, for example, because that for you is standing firm and standing, you know, this is what we stand for and this is what I'm going to do. And I want that respect. If not, then this is not for you, right? It's not a fit.
So if you're a people pleaser by nature and you've got into sales, are you in the wrong job?
No, not necessarily. Depends on how that shows up, right? You can still be a people pleaser. I am or have been, or are working a lot with people pleasing. But I mean, sales in some way is still, you know, a relationship building. It's still working with someone. But that doesn't mean you have to please them in what they want, but you can still meet them in what they might need. So if you have something that they need, I mean, is that people pleasing or is that need pleasing? I don't know, but you know what I mean? So I don't think, if you can find the strength of being a people pleaser, which can come from a good place, what is the positive intention? That's, we talk about in NLP, what's the positive intention behind a behavior? If being a people pleaser is a need to help, is a need to act of service, then that can actually be a good thing.
So it's how do we take a negative and spin it positively? So I want to talk about high performers, and everybody has their own opinion and feelings towards this. What would you say are the top attributes of a high performer?
I would say, if you talk about sales, it would be to totally detach yourself from the outcome. So remove the emotions. Remove the emotions, stay consistent, stick to the plan. It sounds so easy, really. But I think a top performer, they have the mindset. That's the thing. They win in the mindset game. So what I say and what I really believe is that you can have all the skill sets in the world in sales, But if you don't have the mindset, then that's going to be what differentiates you from a top performer and an average performer.
Okay. And do you think, are there some people that are born with the high performer mindset and they just remain unfazed at all times? Or is it something that's taught and grown?
Well, I believe that everyone is born neutral, of course. Everyone has their personality, but it's totally depending on the environment that they grow up in, right? So if you, for example, I come from Lebanon, and we moved in the war, and my dad and mom had to start over again. So I've always seen the resilience mindset. I've always seen the pushing through mindset. You know, that for me is my default. There's never an option to give up. It's in my default, but maybe I wasn't born with it, but I've grown up with it. So same can be with the other. You know, if you're grown up in a environment or in a family where, you know, if something is hard, you just give up. You just say, this is not for me. You hear that, you know, whatever you hear is constantly going into your subconscious mind. If that's what you hear every day, if that's what you see every day, of course, that's going to be part of your default. But again, the good thing is that we can change that.
It reminds me of that Stoic quote, in tough times, the true man reveals himself. So when things get tough, you'll just revert back to whatever that archetype is. So salespeople, I think I saw a report saying that they typically stick around for 12 to 18 months and then move on to the next sales job and just repeat the same thing over and over again, just keep going on that cycle. So what's the relationship that you're seeing between salespeople and failure? Are they getting out and quitting before they get sacked? Is there something deeper? What's that relationship with failure typically?
Are we talking about quitting and leaving for another gig, or are we talking about in general?
Just in general. I mean, is it a case of this job isn't working out, so then they get ahead and they move to another job, or is it just it gets hard and I fail? What's that dynamic?
Sure. No, but of course, I mean, listen, sales is hard. I mean, being in the game of sales is tough. It's mentally draining. And actually, that's why I started with this, because I think I told you, Jack, my husband used to work as a closer, and I used to see him every day in this emotional roller coaster, every day. And it affected everything in his life, not only his work, it was only his health, us, his relationship with his parents, everything. And that's when it all, you know, when I just realized that, whoa, this is a hard game we're playing. So of course, I mean, if you're somewhere and it's hard and you don't have the support system, whether it's in the company or with a coach or with a spouse, whatever, then you're going to look another way and see what, you know, it's normal to, you know, we have this fight or flight. It's normal to feel like I'm not good at this. I don't belong here. This is not for me. And if you don't have the support system, whether it's in your own mindset with a coach or from a manager, then it's normal. It's normal to just do something else. Because, you know, at the end of the day, if you keep get broken down by these thoughts, it will affect your result and it will affect you. And yeah, that's what I'm seeing. So what I say is that if we have this emotional roller coaster like this, at least if I can help them have it like this, because it will happen. It will never be a flat line, you know, then you're kind of dead. But it doesn't have to be so volatile. And if we can take control of that emotion, if we can take control of those feelings, if we can also not take them and use them as a new behavior into a new call, then that can have a huge benefit of our experience, but also how we feel and the result.
So is it a case of not just unlocking what you feel, but why you feel certain things, what those triggers are, why they exist? Is that the road that you tend to take someone down?
100%. Where does this come from? Where is the, you know, what belief does this come from? Why do you fear cold calling? Did you have an experience past, you know, in your life with someone that cold called you? Did someone tell you that cold calling people suck? Did someone tell you that that's annoying? Did someone, when you cold call, told you that, you know, you're so annoying, I don't want to talk to you? But on the other side, have you ever come across a good salesperson? Did you ever have a good sales experience? Did you ever have someone cold calling you that actually impressed you? I have. You know, I used to think people that cold called me was so annoying until I came across some really good people that cold called me. And I totally changed that. So, you know, everything is how you choose to see and what you make out of that happening and experience. And that will shape everything.
Adele, me and Zach, we have our team, and they're predominantly a lot of young people. We do a lot of coaching with a variety of different people. When we are leading and we're trying to help people, it's very easy to probably teach the practical side of things. It's like, here's a skill set, mirroring or labeling. We can teach that. The mindset one is sometimes we sometimes get a bit funny on how do we teach the mindset. My go-to advice would be, go and read some Marcus Aurelius and come back when you're stronger. What can we be doing as leaders and sales managers to help people and salespeople when it comes to developing that winning mindset?
Great one. I think this is where many sales managers fail because, of course, everyone needs to hit their numbers. But I believe that if you could create an environment where it's totally fine to fail or to receive no's or to not close the deals, all those things, where you create an environment where they can come to you and talk to you about how they felt, about their fear, or if you, you know, that they feel that they can be totally open. Because what I've realized when I work with coaches, especially closers, because they sit alone in their home, wherever they are in the world, with their headphones, day in, day out. Probably they don't have so close contact to the sales manager because they're just consulting for a gig. It's a lonely world, and many of them could never talk to them the way they want to because they're afraid of getting, you know, kicked out or judged or anything. So creating that environment where you can have, where they can come to you, and then you can then go to them and ask, just what I said, you know, but where does this come from? Why did you go into that call with this mindset? You know, did you read something in the seller's notes that triggered something? Where did this come from? So for you to create that environment that they can come and talk to you, and for you guys to be curious of why this is happening, what is it that's stopping them? What limited belief is lying there? What stories are they telling themselves? That's most of the time not even happening when they read the seller's notes. Or when they read before do their own research, do they take too much of that into the call and already, you know, decided how that call would play out? So creating that environment for them to be open and honest, I think that you can have a huge gain in that.
I love it. Adele, I feel like we could question you all day on mindset and transformation. I guess, can I hit you with a couple of quick fire questions before we let you go?
Sure.
What would you say is the most common limiting belief that salespeople face?
I'm not good at this. I'm not a good sales. I'm not made for this. Like, I hear that every day. As soon as they hit rejections or objections or they're not having a good day, then this is not for them.
Okay. And what's the one thing they should tell themselves in that situation to keep going?
That is absolutely part of the process. And you wouldn't be a good salesperson if you didn't receive the no's and the rejection as well. It's part of the process.
Good. I like that. What is the best non-fiction book for mindset?
I have it here. I knew you were going to ask me that. Literally. Psycho-cybernetics.
Go on.
Go deep into mindset, limiting beliefs, but also visualization and, you know, taking your past experiences, use them as your asset, building that theater of your mind, creating that situation. It's amazing. It's really, and you can apply it in all areas of life, but he does go into sales, and there's exercises along the way, so you can also help yourself identify whatever you read, and then they say, okay, this is the exercise. It's amazing. I really recommend you to recommend it to your whole team.
I will do. We're going to get on Amazon after this. The best podcast for mindset, what would you recommend? You don't have to say ours, Adele. It's fine.
I love yours. I recently experienced it. I do because it's just special. It's unique. But other than that, I love Mel Robbins. She's great.
Good stuff. And the last question, what is your favorite quote?
In general or in sales?
I guess that could contribute to mindset and sales. Like, what's one quote that stands out to you?
If you don't like where you are, move. You're not a tree. I love that. And that's in general, because it goes so deep into the NLP. Because in NLP, we believe that if you acknowledge something that you don't like, the good thing is that you can change that. So if you don't like where you are, if you don't like what you're doing, if you don't like how it is, change it.
Good stuff. I love it. Adele, thank you so much for joining us. If people listening to this are salespeople that might be struggling, or they want to take their skill set to the next level and become an ultimate performer, and they want to get in contact with you, what should they do?
So the easiest, I'm on LinkedIn, Adele Kamelwithy, as you see here is my name, or Adele at by, what do you say, slash, when you do this? No, it's not slash.
Hyphen?
It's yeah, byyourself.se. But LinkedIn might work. It's the best. I'm there every day, all the time, just like you are, Jack.
Always there. I don't do any work. Adele, no. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been incredible to talk all things mindset with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Keep up the good work, guys. Thank you.